Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. This is the big one. This is the final installment of our 2017 Three Martini Lunch Crystal Martini Glass Awards, and we have saved the most significant, most prominent awards for last. This installment, we have Person of the Year, Turncoat of the Year, and this year we're changing it. We're not doing resolutions this year. We're doing predictions for 2018, so you can check us in 12 months and see how we did. Jim, let's start with Person of the Year. Who do you have?
A figure I probably never would have guessed before this year to put in this category. I think it's safe to say that I and probably many other people either did not think terribly highly of this person or generally dismissed him as a unserious child of a celebrities who had no real, nepotismized his way, to make that into an improper verb, just kind of risen through society and never done anything of serious consequence. Ronan Farrow, I owe you a giant apology. You are arguably, along with the New York Times reporters, Jody Kantor, and the other folks on the New York Times team, the most important journalism work of the year, I would argue. The reporting into Harvey Weinstein that just kind of started the ball rolling on the entire Me Too movement. And we've seen so many prominent figures from the worlds of Hollywood, from the worlds of politics, from the worlds of the news media, starting to stretch into professional athletics. Not that long ago, it seemed like half the NFL network was being put on suspension. This has had a giant social consequence, and it is important journalism, and was also even more fascinating. People might say, why are you picking Ronan Farrow and not the actresses? Why not Rose McGowan or something? They'd all be fine folks. But I was struck by the story of how much internal opposition Ronan Farrow experienced at NBC News. He wanted to send over a camera crew. I believe it was Asia Argento or someone else he wanted to interview. NBC said, no, we're not going to cover the expense of this. And Ronan Farrow shelled out his own money and flew over and did the interviews and had it all together and kept hitting roadblocks inside NBC News for a very, very suspicious, unusual skepticism and lack of curiosity about this story. And something we've never quite gotten fully explained, Greg, I can't help but wonder if Matt Lauer may have had something to do with that. Was there some other reason that NBC News really didn't want people digging into allegations of sexual harassment? The end result, of course, is that Ronan Farrow went to The New Yorker, turned his piece into a just jaw-dropping piece of print journalism, and he did several other follow-ups about the small army that Harvey Weinstein deployed to intimidate people, to buy people off, to ensure that the unsavory and horrific stories of his behavior never saw the light of day. And I think it might represent journalism at its best. It is big. It is consequential. It is well-grounded. It is thorough. It took a lot of time and a lot of effort. But I think it really is changing the country for the better. And so Ronan Farrow, all those times I thought you were just this, empty head with an MSNBC program. I loved his joke in which he said that, hey, as far as we know, Frank Sinatra could be any of our fathers. All in all, look, Ronan Farrow really did showcase himself as a serious journalist. And I believe he's only like 30 years old. So big things to expect from him in the future. And so I salute him for good, important, groundbreaking journalism.
Excellent choice. Yeah, and I think a lot of people on the right had your initial impression of him. His TV show didn't seem to break a whole lot of ground, but just his tenacity, as you perfectly described it, in addition to the fact that he was willing to do the legwork for the story, his tenacity to actually get it out there to be commended as well. I generally like to do a specific person or maybe a couple of people for Person of the Year. But Jim, in this particular year, with so much political rancor, and I guess every year's got a lot of political rancor, but the last couple of years seem to have had the most. So you think who stood out in the best way, the most positive way, in a year otherwise filled with a lot of venom? And so I generally use the word Texas heroes. The flooding from Hurricane Harvey lasted day after day after day. And the response in Texas was so different compared to the response we've seen some other hurricanes in the past. Yes, the government was there and seemed to operate in a competent way. So kudos to the feds and to Governor Abbott and all of his folks there with the rescues from the Coast Guard and so forth. But a lot of folks just dove right in. They used their own boats to go make sure that their neighbors or their loved ones were okay. This was the perfect example of community coming together to help each other in such an American way. And it probably would have happened in other places as well. But nobody waited to be asked. They just jumped in. Some folks knew this huge storm was coming. They drove from other parts of Texas or other parts of the South or even other places because they had a boat and they wanted to help and they were willing to do it only because they wanted to help people, not because they thought they were going to get something out of it. And then a little bit later, we had the horrific church shooting at the church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Over 20 people were killed, many others injured. And you've got this guy across the street, Stephen Williford. He could have easily stayed out of it. Instead, he's this licensed firearms instructor for the NRA. He engages this killer. And then the guy driving along, Johnny Langendorf, comes along. And Williford says, hey, I got to hop in. Let's go after this guy. And Langendorf doesn't even think anything about it. There's a bad guy. Let's go get him. And they got him. They ran him down. And at that point, the gunshots appeared to have taken their toll on the killer. And so that was the end of that story until we got the horrific details of how this guy was allowed to have weapons in the first place. But not waiting for other people to do the job, respecting your community and the people who live around you. We need a lot more of that in a day and age where we don't even know the names of our neighbors a lot of the times. Kudos to the heroes in Texas.
Excellent selection there. I think, you know, because you go down the list of so many great Texans we know, Justice Willett. let's just give this to the state of Texas. Texas, you are our person of the year, or all Texans. You get a piece of this one, other than, you know, maybe Jerry Jones.
Excellent. And we should, as long as we're doing sports, a shout out to J.J. Watt. Obviously, he was one of the Sports Illustrated People of the Year, raised, I believe, $37 million to help flood victims. So just amazing. All right, let's move on to the exact opposite of person of the year. Let's go with turncoat of the year. Jim, who do you have?
Now, Greg, I'll be honest. We got these category selections from the old McLaughlin Group End of the Year Awards. And in a lot of cases, they're great kind of, you know, exercises or kind of give, you can think of this. There are some years I've been like, wait, huh? I don't know. I'm sure we've had Arlen Specter and Charlie Crist and all that stuff. But man, I've never, very rarely have I had a year where like, oh, I know who my turncoat is. Greg, Evan McMullen, the vote I regret probably more than any one I've ever done. Not because Evan McMullen won and did any particular damage. Just that he just won't go away. And he's just become this utterly indistinguishable. He makes John Huntsman look like a rock-ribbed conservative. And it's worth noting that at this point, John Huntsman, the alleged squish, is currently our ambassador to Moscow, right? He's actually serving in the Trump administration. So in a world in which, you know, some quote-unquote squishes or Republican moderates or folks who have kind of abandoned what struck me as their conservative principles have figured out a way to work to find some constructive role in the Trump administration and try to make things better, Evan McMullen has become utterly indistinguishable from every other critic on the left, except it's getting even worse as it goes on, Greg, because not that long ago, he approvingly quoted David Frum, in which he said, quote, conservatism is what conservatives think, say, and do. As conservatives change, so does what it means to be a conservative. Greg, if I wanted this, I could join the progressives. Right? One of the reasons, like one of the great things about conservatism, we have these principles and that, yes, policies may change. The way we react to differing threats and challenges and problems we want to solve has changed, but our principles really don't. If you're a conservative and you start saying, hey, it's time for big government, well, then you're not really a conservative anymore. I would argue if you are thinking of yourself as a conservative, but you say, you know what? It's time to tear down the military. It's time to cut military spending. It's time to de-arm. We can reach out to hostile states with kumbaya. I'm sorry, you're not a conservative anymore. And you can say, okay, maybe the most changes you've seen in this country has been on social policy. But if at any point you look at the, you know, the traditional family and you say, nah, we don't need that anymore. I'm sorry, you're at a conservative club. The first rule of conservative club is you don't talk about conservative club. No, you should talk about conservative club. We should hash these things out. Evan McMullen, I don't know if he ever – look, he worked in the CIA. Good for him. Thank you for serving your country. I don't quite get what – it was interesting to see how much he was running as an anti-Trump protest candidate and not as a guy articulating conservative principles. And it's been deeply dispiriting to see him so eagerly embrace the role of the – moderate, sensible conservative who thinks everything Trump is doing is wrong. Because, look, and I say this as a guy who has a lot of problems with Trump. Look, even a blind squirrel can find an acorn. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. I think you have to give Trump credit where it's due. And I don't think McMullen does that. It rarely, if ever. And he's become Johnny One Note, and he's just become insufferable. And I guess this idea that, well, conservatism is changing. Well, it's changing. I didn't like it when conservatism was, quote unquote, changing in the direction of Trump. And I don't like the idea that's changing in the direction of anti-Trump. But, you know, maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy, Greg.
Wow. Maybe you should actually be faithful to conservative principles, and regardless of who you're voting for or not voting for. Wow. Amazing. Yeah, good choice. Evan McMullen has definitely jumped the shark. I believe it's his tweet encouraging people not to vote for Ed Gillespie that made him our crazy martini one day earlier this year because, you know, Ed's such a rabid alt-right guy. All right. I go back for my turncoat of the year to the Obamacare debate. That's clearly the biggest conservative disappointment of the year, that it couldn't get through. And we talked about that in terms of the worst political theater of 2017. But there's a specific moment in there that gets my award for turncoat of the year. Republicans, of course, following the passage of Obamacare in early 2010, made that the hallmark of their campaign message every 2 years after that, that, hey, we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. They said it in 2010, they got the House back. They said it in 2012. Well, they didn't win anything there. But in 2014, they got the Senate back. And that year, they had a vote to repeal Obamacare, and it passed. It got vetoed by Obama, but 52 people voted for it, including a lot of Republicans who are still in the United States Senate. So when the issue came around in July, Rand Paul offered an amendment with the exact same language as the late part of 2015, and six Republicans who voted for the repeal then voted against it now because there was more political pressure and largely because they knew it would actually get signed. Susan Collins deserves a little bit of credit here. She's not one of the turncoats because she actually voted against it both times. But the six members who voted for it in 2015 when they knew it was going nowhere but voted against it in 2017 because they knew it would actually get signed, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, Dean Heller of Nevada, John McCain of Arizona, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, and Rob Portman of Ohio. Obviously, some of them have helped themselves a little bit with their tax vote in more recent days, but the big item on the agenda this year was repealing Obamacare, and seeing these people do the exact opposite of what they promised to do is my vote for turncoat of the year.
Excellent, excellent suggestion or nomination there, Greg. I'm still going to give it to Evan. You haven't totally persuaded me. It's a bit personal with McMuffin, but I also think, by the way, I applaud the shift we've made this year away from the New Year's resolutions, because let's face it, Greg, I'm sure listeners are tired of me saying, you know, I'm really going to try to lose weight this year, and then having that not happen. So I think predictions are a better choice to go in. Now, did you want like one particular one, or kind of have a domino effect that I see come out of my category of predictions? Will this qualify for our category?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've done the homework here, let's hear it.
All right. We're heading into 2018. It is a midterm election. I do not expect it to go well for Republicans. I don't think whether they lose the Senate, the map is very tough for Democrats. You'd like to think that they can, you know, only they can lose two or fewer. I'm sorry. They basically should have enough low hanging fruit in places like West Virginia against Joe Manchin, Missouri against Claire McCaskill, that you'd think they'd be able to pick up some of these seats. But it is, you know, by no means a slam dunk. I can recall in 2006, the Republicans heading into the midterms and thinking, well, there's no way we're going to lose all the close races in the Senate. But the problem is, in wave years, yeah, sometimes you do. And while I think you can overinterpret things like the 2017 races, the gubernatorial races in Virginia and New Jersey, I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to point out that Democrats are fired up, and they're likely to be fired up between now and Election Day. The big question will be, is the Republican base fired up? If they are, then good. Then this will probably mitigate the losses. If not, then, you know, a big sweeping win for Democrats is quite possible. Now, a lot of people are probably saying, oh, Jim, you're such a pessimist. You're so gloomy. I do think that if we have a return of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi or Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, that this will actually enhance the likelihood of Donald Trump getting reelected as president of the United States. I think this would give him a villain to run against. It would give him a scapegoat for everything that goes wrong. I also think it's fairly clear that if the Democrats win the House, they will impeach the president. It will go to the Senate. I think it's very hard to see, 67 votes to support President Trump's impeachment. But I also think the country, as much as they may not particularly approve of Donald Trump, doesn't want to undo the 2016 election, particularly during economic good times and things like that, barring, of course, some, smoking gun evidence in collusion with Russia or something like that, or say, war with North Korea or something like that. I think that you have the parallels to 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2012 are pretty plausible in my mind. And so I could very easily see Republicans having a terrible midterm election, but much to their relief, they end up winning the presidency again in 2020 because the Democrats have overextended and overinterpreted their mandate in Congress, and also probably nominate somebody who's not all that appealing. So that's a kind of an extra bonus long-term predictions of how I think the next couple of years will play out. If I turn out to be wrong, Greg, we're going to destroy all these tapes, right?
Well, it's always good to be wrong. If you're going to be wrong, it's going to be wrong on predictions where you think bad things are going to happen. So at least you can be happy about that. Mine, it's along the same lines. I'm going to go a step farther and say, even though the map looks really good for Republicans right now, that I think the Democrats are going to win the House and the Senate. And one of the reasons why is I believe we're going to get a Lawrence Walsh type moment from Bob Mueller. I'm going to say post Labor Day, he's going to recommend impeachment charges against the president for obstruction of justice.
Wow. All right, I'm writing that one down. That's a good prediction.
How's that for bold?
If you nail it, I'm going to conclude that you have a source in Mueller's office that you've been hiding all this time.
Oh, man. So, yeah, we've really got rosy forecasts here for 2018 and beyond. But
bring it on, 2018.
In the meantime, Jim, have a very happy new year. It's been a blast going through 2017 with you. It's been a crazy year. It's been an awkward year. It's been a depressing year in some ways. But there's also been some really good things that have happened. And one of the best things, of course, for me each year is to get to do this with you every day. It's been a blast. Have a great new year, and we'll pick it up again on January 2nd.
Well, thank you, Greg. I'm already looking forward to next year with you.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us for these very special year-end awards. Have a happy New Year's Eve and a safe one. Happy New Year's Day. And we'll be back on Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018, for the next 3 Martini Lunch.